Welcome. You're listening to the Internet Advisor Podcast with your co-hosts, Gary Baker, Foster Brown, and their team of experts. Since 1998, this program has been helping people like you with your computer problems, introducing you to valuable resources and programs, and promoting tech businesses in our area. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour radio program heard weekly on WJR 760 AM in Detroit and across the state on the Michigan Talk Network. Now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome aboard the Internet Advisor. Hi, Foster Brown. Great crew here today, Gary Baker, Cal Carson, and none other than Mr. Gadget himself, the gadget guy, Rick Broida. He's got a whole lot to talk about today. You don't want to miss it. We're going to be talking about everything from the Moto X phones to, iPhone 6 and some of the good and bad news this week for Apple, and even talk about Chromebooks. All that coming up this hour of the Internet Advisor. I'm delighted that you decided to share a little time with us here on the Internet Advisor. My name is Foster Brown, co-host of the program, and along with me, my old partner here in crime, and that is Mr. Gary Baker. Good to have you, Gary.
It's great to be here. It's a wonderful day in the neighborhood.
Oh, lovely day in the neighborhood. And we have the white-haired guru of all things Apple, Cal Carson.
I love every time he does that because, you know, like, when he does that, immediately I see people leaning toward the speaker of the radio, looking closely and saying, I can see that white hair. You know, just like when Ray Charles and Stevie Wonder were talking one day and Ray Charles said, take a look at this. And Wonder looked at him and said, I see what you mean.
Oh, dear. And on that note, let me pass this over to Rick Broida, the gadget guy who's with us.
I cannot top that.
Yeah, it's always it's not very good to follow Cal somehow. You know?
Yes, I don't think anybody's required, fortunately, to do that. But it's good to have you in-house. As a matter of fact, Rick, we're going to do something today that we haven't done in a while. And that is to give you kind of a free rein to talk about gadgets because there's so much going on.
There is.
Stuff that you've written about. I'm also wondering if there's a special announcement coming.
It's coming. I don't know if it's going to be today, but soon.
Geez, I was hoping we would sneak a little march on that, but that's okay. We'll get through this.
Patience. So tune in tomorrow.
So I don't even remember what it was now, but somebody asked a question last week. And while, as typical here, one of us is trying to get more information from the caller, everybody else is online trying to figure out, you know, what the answer is, right? Yeah. And Ed goes, you know, in our headphones, he says, my God, I think I found the answer. And it's an article written by Rick Broida.
Oh, that was right. How to tell the file size.
Oh, that's what it was.
How to tell the size of a file.
Wow. And
you wrote an article.
That must go back a ways.
PC World, like 2-3 years ago.
Right.
Wow. You're everywhere.
I'm telling you, internet famous.
I'll tell you what, it helped us. We could answer
it
the question after we read that article.
It was marvelous.
I can't walk down the streets of the internet anymore without being recognized.
Whiz, what was it, tree, whiz tree?
Maybe.
WizTree, I think, was it.
It was WizTree. I remember WizTree. That quite
right.
Well for many reasons.
We're not going there. That's
no,
not that kind of show.
But it is time for us to go to Mr. Mike Brennan, who is the editor of MITechNews.com. And Mike, so good to have you with us here on the program again. How you doing?
Always great, Foster. Thanks for asking.
Thank you very much. Unfortunately, I'm raising frogs today for a restaurant. So I'll let you talk a little bit about some of your headlines. Getting down to some of your headlines here. Shell shock bug could dispel disaster for major digital companies. And matter of fact, it's called Bash, isn't it too?
Well, it's the Bash shell that they're bashing with the shell shock bug.
Ah.
And it's been around forever. It's on most computers, but the vulnerability has never been exploited before. Now it is. And this is one where they can actually seize control of your computer, use it in denial of service attacks, do all sorts of bad things.
Well, we're going to talk.
Patch that computer, right?
So. Absolutely. Yeah, well, we're going to talk
and,
a little later
and
about
it's mostly
that.
Servers.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Every once in a while, you could have a Linux box on a user PC. Or the Mac, if you if you put Mac Shell.
Server.
Yep.
Right.
We'll
talk a little bit more about that later on at length in our show, but thank you for that headline, a very important one that certainly is making its way around the internet. Another one I saw in here from MI Tech News was that AT&T is offering business fiber high-speed internet service in Detroit now.
Yeah, you got to be in one of their business fiber buildings. It's got to be wired specially for that, but it's incredibly fast. And you know, with all the big files, everyone's moving, video, all that stuff going on, you really need to have a very high speed, and this is one way to do it, and very, very fast, and check it out at AT&T.
So, will this be like what some of Dan Gilbert's buildings downtown?
Well, I mean, it's however they wire the building. They have the special fiber in the building first. If Dan could do it, anybody could do it. But, I mean, they have buildings right now they call AT&T fiber-ready buildings.
Excellent.
Because the landlord has helped pay for putting it
right,
in
exactly.
to attract tenants. Right?
But really, really important, especially for the budding high-speed digital industry that's growing around here right now. One more before we talk about how to get hold of MI Tech News. It says we're one more step closer to creating Star Trek-style transporters and warp drives. I got to hear what that one is.
Well, it's a bit of a reach. This is a column I picked up from CNET. It's actually they're being able to transport photons now, but you can't even see photons. But I mean, it's got to start somewhere, right?
Yep, yep.
But they were able to transport a photon 15.5 miles away in this test. And so it's the beginning, but I mean, you have to have incredible amounts of energy to transport a human. And I certainly wouldn't want to be the first one to go through there and come out the other side turned inside out or something, right?
I was going to say, is that part of the process? You have to say, beam me up, Scotty, before the whole thing starts?
Oh, probably.
Yeah, there you go. Well, but I don't know if we're going to see it in our lifetime, but...
Are the first steps. These are the first steps, and they're fascinating. By the way, if you'd like to get more headlines like this, plus other things for entrepreneurs and about venture capitals out there and meetings that are coming up, great places to network, or just more of these headlines about what's going on in terms of technology in our state of Michigan and around the country and the world, all you need to do is go to internetadvisor.net, our homepage, and then scale down the page there to the Mike Brennan smiling face right next to him. You can click on that subscribe button, and then for free, for absolutely nothing, you put your email address in there, and you are signed up. And then every Friday, you're going to get not just these headlines, you're also going to get some audio files and lots of other great stuff that's available to you.
And I like the story behind the story that Mike gives us so often.
Absolutely, and that's the value of having Mike Brennan in your corner here with MI Tech News. Mike, thanks so much again this week. Look forward to talking with you again soon and to getting the next issue of MI Tech News.
Absolutely. Thanks, Gary and Foster.
You're welcome, sir. Back in just a moment to talk with the Gadget Guy, Rick Broida. Well, you know, normally when Rick Broida comes into the studio now, the first salutation is duck, because something comes flying in the room ahead of him, or at least with him. At least it did the last time out. Rick Broida, it's so good to have you with us in
so
studio.
So good to be here. I did not bring any drones this time, though.
So that I will tell you, that was fun, to have the drone flying around. And wait a minute, we got to make sure the program director's not listening. That we had drones flying in the studio. But you're pretty good with that.
Has the FAA dictated that no drones in the studio?
I don't know. We don't want to give them a chance to dictate anything. But the thing, fascinating thing to me was, you brought that drone, and you were so good at flying it. The next week, Gary brought his in, and we saw just
promptly
what goes
crashed.
Into learning how to do it properly.
We were not as good.
So there was a wonderful big learning curve that we knew nothing about until we brought that into the studio.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, be informed that the Internet Advisor is just a group of young boys having a good time. As
with
you can
big
see,
toys.
When one brings in a toy, the other one has to go out and get
there
one.
There you go. There you go.
So much fun. My son just loves it.
Oh, yeah. Well, those things are a blast.
And for $69, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, folks, if you want to look back a couple of our podcasts, you'll see all the information in there, including a little video of the test flight in studio with the drone.
I just love the cover line that Gary used for his wife. Oh, my son just loves this.
It's for the kids, honey.
I love it. Well, Rick, we are delighted to have you with us. We have taken your name in vain in various programs in terms of great resources that you provide on the web. And just to give you credit, you write not only, you're appearing here graciously in person, we're very grateful to have you in the area to talk about gadgets, but you're also on CNET, where I'm seeing you more and more. Your columns are appearing right there, front page, CNET.
Yes, indeed. I cover not only I write the Cheapskate blog for CNET, but also cover iPhone and Android stuff and tablet stuff and how-to stuff. So yeah, CNET's
a good
home.
You're also involved with eHow.
Yes, eHow is a great how-to site if you're looking for like basically a tutorial on just about how to do anything. You'll find good stuff on eHow.
Well, you know, there's a few more people now, but it's hard to be technical enough to understand what you're writing about and then write about it in a way the rest of us can understand. Yeah. And that's really,
and that really
think
is your gift.
It's a rare gift. Yeah, it is your gift. It's a heavy burden, but someone has to carry it.
I understand it anyway, so I think that, you know, it's pretty understandable.
That's not saying a lot.
That's what I said. That was my point. It was a fairly low bar.
So, Rick, did you bring in...
You know, we didn't... do you still do that article with the other guy where you guys go head-to-head?
That's eHow, right?
Yes. Oh, my God. That is... Like that.
Dave Johnson, right?
Folks, you got to go to that site. It's worth the look. Yep. It's a great time.
The column is called Geek versus Geek, and I do it with my buddy Dave Johnson, and there's a print version that we do once a month, but we also do these video segments. In fact, I'm headed out to California next month to do another batch, and we just have fun arguing about all things technology, and... You know, I'm right about most things, and he's wrong about most things, so it works out great for me.
Of course.
Wait a minute. Get Dave on the phone.
You learn a lot, but it's really a great, it's entertaining. It is.
Thank you.
Get a lot
I appreciate
out of
that.
It.
It's
hugely
fun.
Entertaining. Now I've got to ask you the most important question. Did you bring your iPhone 6 with you?
I did. I have an iPhone 6. And I'm keeping an eye on it, Foster. Eyeballing it.
Well, I just wanted to get the feel of the thing to see how it feels. But did you bring the 6 Plus, too?
I'm actually waiting on the 6
so
Plus because I did splurge a bit. Went very much against the cheapskate grain, and I pre-ordered both.
Oh, wow.
Because my thinking was that I will see which one I like better, and then the other will go on eBay. And a profit, probably, given hard they are to come by.
Oh,
yes. So, but I did have a chance to fiddle with the 6 Plus a bit in a T-Mobile store recently. Mm-hmm. And I'm feeling like I will probably end up with the Plus. And
oh, really?
This is very much a personal preference thing because everybody kind of has their own thought as far as, that's too big or that's exactly the size I want. I've been waiting for a big iPhone for a long time, and I'm loving the 6 for its size, but I think the bigger one, and again, you can check me next month.
I have been surprised that the people that I know, the commentaries I've listened to, Leo Laporte and his group, and the 6 Plus is the one that people are going for.
Right, so long as you don't put it in your back pocket and sit down on it with all your weight.
Should we get
that out of the way?
Let's just get this out of the way, because this week was a disastrous week for Well, I should say this. It was a good week for people who like to knock Apple, because there was a... an update to the iOS 8, which is a new mobile system.
Right.
iOS 8.0.1 did a lot of stuff to people's phones. It was retracted almost immediately. I mean, I was thinking as soon as I saw it, I could get to it.
Yeah,
it
was like
gone.
20 minutes or something.
Yeah, and then within a day, I think it was, within a day, maybe a little over 24 hours, it had been solved.
Right.
Well, they have the 8.02
version out now.
That solved that and took care of all the things that the first one was supposed to take care
of all the bugs. And at the risk of sounding like an Apple apologist, you know, I mean, people were very unhappy. Cal's making a face like, you? you know, there was a lot of people who were, of course, very upset when this update came out and it kind of bricked their phones.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Apple is a huge company. And for them to be able to be as nimble as that,
to push out an update
inside of 24 hours is really quite amazing.
Think of Windows.
If this had been a Microsoft, a Windows issue, could have been days or weeks.
And they just had this happen recently where an update that they sent out did a whole lot of damage, and they had to pull it. Am I wrong?
Yeah, but it was fairly quick, too.
Yeah, and within a week they had it back. But
well,
I mean, this
it was
is
less
within.
Than that. Yeah.
Well, yeah, okay. Yeah. But the point is. Tremendous turnaround on getting the fix.
Right.
The other thing that came out this week was this whole bend gate. And by the way, folks, if you go to internetadvisor.net, I got some pictures there. They're just kind of funny. But essentially, the claim was that if you put this iPhone 6 Plus into one of these designer jeans, which look like they're sprayed on to start with, and my physiology couldn't fit anyway. But in any case, apparently, if you did that, these things, being aluminum, would bend.
If you sit down.
If you sit
and
down
and then apply
them.
Weight to the phone.
stupid do you have to be to do that? But
well, you know, somebody was telling me recently that they carry their phone in their back pocket all the time. And they sit down all the time with their phone in their back pocket. That's pretty dumb, if you ask me.
With any phone,
with any piece of electronics. You know, now the 6 Plus being larger and... depending on how much weight you're putting when you sit down on it. Yeah, I suppose that's going to happen. But I think it's funny how people are now testing their phones to see if they can bend them. And I'm sure if you apply enough pressure, you will absolutely bend.
Yeah, it's kind of like saying, when I hit it with a hammer.
Hand it to me. I'm not going to bend it. But what I want to explain is that on the back of the phone, you'll see an Apple logo.
Yeah.
That Apple logo is not just stuck on the back. It's actually cut into the phone, and then they apply it on the inside to the phone. Well, what that does is at that particular point in the back of the phone, it does weaken the structure of the aluminum.
And I saw on the buttons as well. On the button side is also...
And because of where it's placed at and where the buttons are, and because it's aluminum, that's the reason why it has less resiliency at that particular point.
But to put this into framework, too, first of all, Apple says, and they've only had 9 phones come back, and when they've come back, they've replaced them.
Sure, sure.
Only 9 out of 10 million that have gone out so far. Now, the other thing, though, was, and this was a big thing for me, Consumer Reports came out and said, this is nonsense. This is not a huge issue when you compare it in terms of the number of people who have experienced and the reason why they experienced it. You know, and then afterwards, people are trying to make it happen. It's ludicrous.
I wouldn't put a $600 piece of any electronic equipment in my back pocket and
absolutely
sit down, period.
No. It's just kind of dumb. But let's get back to what has been your experience with the iPhone 6 that you have right there?
Well, first of all, I really like it. I've been waiting for a larger iPhone for some time because I've definitely been, for one thing, my eyes are getting old and I need a bigger screen. And I'm tired of all the Android fanboys crowing about their big screens and, oh, look at that little toy you have.
You were an Android user until back recently when you went back.
In fact, I tried a Moto X, which was just about exactly this size and just didn't really care for the Android experience. I still don't. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it kills me how much money I spent on this thing. I mean, it kills me how much. Yeah. But relative to what you can get for Android, for half the money, for a third the money, the Android power you can buy.
Yeah,
but
that's true.
I like the iPhone. I just like the experience of it.
Now, you bought it. You bought that outright.
Yeah, so I went with the T-Mobile version, which was the only one that was available at launch, contract-free, because I'm not doing any more two-year contracts. Not now, not ever. And so I splurged. I paid full price for this thing.
You can do it on AT&T. You don't have to have a contract either.
Well, I found that out later, Gary. Where were you when I needed to know that?
Because that's how I bought mine, but I don't have it yet.
Let's go back and talk a little bit more about that, but I also want to talk about some of the other things that you've been focusing on, the Moto X, the Moto G, and also on Chromebooks. Rick Brunda, the gadget guy with us in studio. You be sure to stay tuned. We got much more to talk about. Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, Cal Carson, and Rick Breida in studio. Delighted to have all these guys with us. We're talking today about gadgets, obviously. One of the ones at the top of the list is something that's been much in the news, good and bad, and that is the iPhone 6. I finally have had one in my hands, and I'm amazed at how much it feels like the old phones, but there's a little more real estate on it. And I like that little more real estate. It's not a whole lot more on the 6, is it?
No, it doesn't feel like you're getting a super huge phone.
It feels
like a comfortable size to me.
Absolutely.
And, again, people are, I think, concerned, especially existing iPhone users are concerned that, will this still fit in my pocket? It'll absolutely fit in your
pocket. You're only going from a 4-inch screen to a 4.7-inch screen.
Right.
And the bevels make it seem, first of all, it's thinner. Right?
It is
a little thinner.
And the bevels make it seem a little smaller for some reason.
Yeah. For some reason, right. They've gone away from the squared off corners. Yeah.
Physically, it's not so much larger than, say, a 5S would be.
Right.
And again, it's a beautiful design. It's typical for Apple. Yeah. And, it's... for anybody who's been waiting for a bigger screen, this is nice.
But it's more than just a bigger screen, right? It's the processor's faster, right?
It's faster, but the phone's better. It's such incremental improvement at this point.
But it's catching up.
The camera had been
behind the Android phones, and it's catching up now
in terms of speed.
Almost everything.
Yeah,
right.
Right.
Just
but
about
iOS
everything.
8 is actually responsible for a lot of what the iPhone 6 can do as far as that catch-up goes. It's not just a hardware issue. iOS 8 brings a lot of little improvements, which are, very nice, like some of the things you can do with texting now and, new features in the camera.
The swipe keyboard.
Oh, my gosh.
Isn't that great?
Yes. Finally.
Isn't that
thank
great?
You. But right? you know what I've discovered, much to my surprise, is that even the stock keyboard with its predictive text, it's not only that it's trying to guess the word that it will guess the word as you type it. So mm-hmm. you can type a 2-3 letters, and then you know you kind of tap the word.
Yeah.
It guesses the next word.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
if you're going to say something like, "Do you want to meet me for lunch?"
Yeah.
It will literally almost guess every single word as you go, and so yeah. it's just kind of tap, 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 tap. Boom, sentence. It's really quite impressive.
And, well, you know, and actually, it doesn't make the grammar mistakes that I would. Yeah. So.
Right. The real truth is not guessing at all. That camera on the front is watching you type.
And when it's location
looks,
aware.
It looks in the background and looks like, hey, he looks like he's hungry. Let's say lunch.
Cal is just kidding, ladies and gentlemen. He's just kidding.
He's just kidding.
One of the things I like, for instance, with texting now is that as I like dictating the text.
Yes.
As I am texting, speaking, I can see what I'm saying appearing on the screen.
Right.
Yeah, I really like that.
It's not just you dump the words in and then it spits them back out.
It used
to
be you had
text.
To wait for Siri to kind of make her mind up to
right.
give it back to you.
Although what's annoying is that you still need to be connected to the internet
yes.
for that to work, which
yes.
I don't quite get. I don't think that Android has that limitation.
No.
But anyway, it's an improvement.
The reason
sure.
why you have to be connected to the internet for that to work is because you're actually sending that information back to Apple's servers. It's doing yeah. the work for you and then coming back
I
to you.
I don't know how that is possible that it could be doing it that quickly because it's the
You're right.
speed at which the word appears after you say it, it can't be traveling.
Yeah, can't
be some sort of hybrid model.
It's,
yeah.
But
right?
there's some reason, I'm sure, for it, but I don't think that's what it is.
Well, but
I'd be willing to bet you.
I'll bet maybe there's some of it, but it's probably hybrid, right?
Yeah, part of the processing, I was told, was going back to their servers and coming back.
But it's appearing, the words appear instantaneously.
But have you noticed that sometimes it corrects? So I think what's happening is maybe it's guessing locally and it's verifying remotely.
Could very well
because
be.
Sometimes I'll be saying something and it'll get the words a little bit wrong, but mm-hmm. then it'll fix itself.
One of the other fun things I found out with this is that I have an iPad 2 now.
Usually my wife does that for me.
Is that when I have my phone, for instance, my phone is somewhere else being
right.
charged, the iPad rings.
Yes, I've heard that. Is that funny?
So I can answer the phone, yes. I guess, on the iPad.
So
I haven't
just hold
done
it up
yet.
To your head if you can make a phone call.
All right, listen, we could talk a lot more about this. I want to make one quick stop before we go on now to the Android side and talk about the Motos. But Cal, I wanted to stop for just a moment because I know that something important has happened with Mac Group Detroit, the big Mac, one of the largest in the country. Terry
and the
White,
first.
Who was the president, was the first. Okay, Terry
one of the
White,
first, anyway,
who reigned there for almost.
Well, he was the founder of the
yeah,
group.
Yeah, right.
He started back in the 90s. Well, maybe it was further back than that. Roughly about 28 years. He was the founder, and for 28 years, every month religiously, never missed the one. He was at every Mac Group right. meeting and ran them and orchestrated them, stuff like that. And so he had a lifestyle change, and he moved to Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he left, he said, you know, this group will go on if it's going to go on with me or without me.
Yep.
Because actually the group is not necessarily Terry White. The group is all the members
right.
that are part of
right.
it. And so now he's gone, and last weekend, matter of fact, we had our first meeting without him, which was a weird, surreal experience for me,
because
I had never seen anything like that before. But there are members of the organization who have stepped up and decided they'll keep this thing going, the meeting went off flawlessly without any problem. Sheeta Hunter was one of our lifetime members, and she pretty much did the whole meeting that particular day because she had subject matter to fill it up with. And Dave McGuire is another person that's involved with that. Brian Stone's involved. And for some reason or another, they said, hey,
yeah.
why don't we take that bozo on the radio and put him in charge, too?
Guess who has the mic all the time?
So no one person is El Presidente for life, but it's a group effort, and we're going to maintain that group and keep it going and mold it in the directions that need to be done.
Oh, that's great. Well, awesome. Just let you folks know it's continuing. Cal is part of that group that's helping it to continue, and I'm so delighted to hear that. Now, Rick, let's get back to you. Rick Brody here. You brought some other things. Now, we don't want people thinking this is an Apple-centric program, although one more thing we're going to talk about in just a little bit. But you had some comments you want to make about the Moto X and the Moto G.
Sure. So let's give some equal time to Android.
Yep.
You know, it was funny. Motorola scheduled their new product launch the Friday before Apple's iPhone 6 launch, which
mm-hmm.
I just cannot fathom.
How did that happen? Coincidence, right?
Well, I mean, why would... I understand them wanting to maybe beat them to the punch, but like they had basically one business day and then a weekend before they were completely lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, exactly.
In any case, I went to actually Chicago and sat in on the product launch, which was really cool. But so Motorola took the wraps off some pretty cool products. A new version of the Moto X phone, which is the phone that's customizable. You can order it with like kind of a custom backplate and accents and so forth, and has been
physically
very
customizable.
Exactly, and has been very popular for them. And then a new version of the Moto G, which to my thinking is the single best budget phone you can buy today.
I've heard that.
Yeah. So
why do you say that?
Well, because the Moto G, especially in its new incarnation, is a 5-inch phone with an HD screen. It's not ultra high resolution, but it's an HD screen nonetheless.
Yeah.
Decent processor, good storage, expandable with a micro SD slot.
That is a big thing, I think.
And you can buy it for $179 unlocked, which means you take it to whatever carrier you want and get the best service plan that you can.
And it runs, which one of the KitKat?
KitKat, yeah. Absolutely.
Which is the latest
version of Android. And it's I've got a demo unit, and it's just a very solid, nice feeling phone. For $179.
Well, wait a minute, I'm a little bit confused. Help! No, seriously, okay. No, this is serious. You said you can buy one and take it to any carrier, so it doesn't matter whether the carrier is CMDA or GSM.
Thank you for mentioning that. Actually, so I think there are two flavors. There's a GSM version and a CDMA version, but
would you explain that just for our listeners?
Well, so there's two different types of carrier technology, right? There's GSM and there's CDMA, and basically in our country that we have the big four carriers: AT&T and T-Mobile rely on GSM, Verizon and Sprint rely on CDMA. Uh-huh. Of the two, I think GSM is the vastly superior technology. Yes. But in any case, if depending on which carrier you want to go to, or one of their little offshoot carriers like
Republic,
Straight Talk. You have to make sure you get the right version. Mm-hmm. Again, I don't recall if it's available in those two flavors or it's just GSM.
But buyer beware.
Right. It might be a world phone that it works with all of them.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I wouldn't either. I really don't recall, but certainly you can find out online. But the one bummer about it is that it's limited to 3G. You won't get 4G speeds on it, and Motorola has its reasoning for doing that, and the last version of the Moto G they came out with, about 6 months later, they came out with a 4G version for about $50 more. They may well do the same thing here.
That's still not bad. You're still just a little over $200.
Oh, my... Yeah, I mean,
that's a buyout of a
phone.
For
the buck. I mean, it's got removable backplates. Wow. You can put on a different colored backplate. It's just like... It's just a nice little phone, and it's, you know, 5-inch... So I'm very excited about that. And then the other product that they... released was the Moto 360, which is the watch, which I'm wearing on my...
Oh, you are? I didn't see that.
Everybody comes running over.
Get him! Get him, quick!
I thought you were checking your pulse every continually or
this,
something.
I've got the... Anyway, I'm not going to explain it to my other wrist, but anyway, so this is the Moto 360, which is Motorola's smartwatch, and works only with Android phones, unfortunately, which is a bummer for me, but is a nice product. I'm not really sold on whether somebody needs it, but...
I want to talk a little bit more about that. Sure. Rick Redd with us. We're talking about some of the new Android products that are out, and it's particularly the watch, and I'm fascinated to talk more about it. This whole new category of wearables. Back with the Internet Advisor to do more of that. We've been talking gadgets today with Rick Broida, who is our gadget guy. It's always fun to have him in here in the studio to see these things as well. And Rick, you handle a lot of gadgets. I mean, that's part of really your life, is just wearing these things, putting them to the test.
It's a tough job. Somebody's got to do it.
Somebody's got to do it. I am curious. We were talking just before the break about the watch you have, which is the Moto 360. And just in general, what's that experience like for you? Is it really adding anything to your life? Is it, kind of fun? But because I'm wondering if this wearable thing is a fad that'll come and go, or do we really have something that's significant going on?
Yeah, and before you answer that, how many steps did you take yesterday?
Let's see. Well, today I'm up to almost 2,000. So all I did was bring it up to my wrist, and there it is. It's such a good question, Foster, because... on the one hand, it almost seems like superfluous technology.
Yep.
Like, it's not something that any of us really need, but can it be useful and practical?
And do you like it?
The Moto 360, I don't love. Okay. And, you know, for a variety of reasons, it's a little bulky. You have to charge it pretty much every day. I find that navigating the interface of the watch is very cumbersome. Things will pop up that I didn't want and can't get rid of. It's a little strange in that respect. Plus, it pairs with Android phones, and it won't pair with my iPhone, which is a bummer for me. And so I'm not able to give it, I guess, quite the complete real-world experience of testing that I would if I was an Android user. But anyway, as I've used it, I mean, it's pretty cool because you can literally bring it up to your wrist and or bring it up close to you and tap it and issue any kind of Google command, like, you know, remind me to buy milk at the store, or what's the capital of Nebraska. Anything you can do with Google on your phone, you can do with the watch as well. Yeah. And that's pretty cool. Yeah, it's definitely very cool. But I really, you know, I've been saying for a while that I think it's going to take Apple to make the smartwatch category work, because they will figure it out.
It's got to be maddening for Samsung and all the other competitors. Well, because
they've
had these wearables out for a while. Right. They've had the Note and many other things out of excellent pieces of equipment. But it's kind of like once Apple appears on the scene, it just has
It's just like the MP3 players that we bought initially, and everybody kind of went, wow, this is kind of cool, and it took the iPod.
You're exactly
which is
right.
Apple's
right. And same
MP3
with the
player,
I mean,
right?
The smartphone too.
I want to step back to something we were talking about before with the Moto G, which is the phone, and it's available in three different flavors in the U.S. But if you want to use 4G LTE, they have a U.S. GSM model, and it looks like it handles a whole lot of the 4G LTE bands. So I'm going to guess if you have anything that runs a GSM 4G LTE band, you'd be able to use it.
Well, keep in mind, the new version of the Moto G, which was just announced, and I don't even know if is officially on sale yet, is limited to 3G. The previous revision was 4G capable. But even so, as far as which carriers it will support, I think you're right. There's going to be basically the three versions. So whatever network you want to go to. Right, check it out first.
Whatever one you're going to use, whether it's one of the offshoots, Cricket or one of the other ones, you know, whatever it may be, or one of the major ones, folks, please check that out ahead of time. Quickly, guys, I want to talk about something that came up this week called Bash. And first of all, would somebody please explain what that is? And it's being written up as the next Heartbleed virus that's out there that spells doom, even though it's been around, I understand, for like 25 years.
Well, 22 years. And it actually stands for Born Again Shell. And it's basically a shell that that you can use to program computers. It's specifically for Linux or for the Mac OS, but you have to be running. I'm sorry.
Hi, Dad. Can I ask you a question?
Yes, Cal.
We were talking about, you know, making things clear for people. Could you tell them what a shell is?
A shell is just a place where you can take and inject a command to tell the server to do something.
Tell the computer to do something.
Computer to do something. And these are primarily on servers. So if you have a Mac and you have a Mac server, you probably need to pay attention and to go patch this. And there are patches coming out. If your Mac is not a server, which most people listening to this podcast, you will not have a server.
Right, right.
You probably don't have to worry about this one. But the fact is that since this has been out for 22 years, there's probably other things out there that we haven't found or discovered yet.
Yeah.
And we just hope that the good guys discover them before the bad guys, right?
And it sounds like Apple essentially has made their announcement is that basically most folks, am I right, Cal, who are using OS X, any form of that, are pretty well covered because
unless you're
behind a firewall or a router,
right.
You know.
Unless you're on a server.
Right. Unless you're on a server. And then apparently there are Xcode. There are ways of protecting it. Am I right on that, Cal? You can upgrade.
Yeah, that is correct. But the smartest thing to do is whatever platform you may be using, whether it be Windows, Mac, whether it's Linux, whatever ones that are out there, make sure you have all the current security updates applied to that machine. That's your best defense to start with.
Okay.
Now, the best thing that's happening for enterprises is that there have been so many Linux boxes, little servers stood up to do this, that, the other thing. I think what we're all concerned about, because if you have a web server, mm-hmm. it's almost
there are other web servers, but
99% probably.
I can't even think of what they are, right?
Yeah,
that's not quite true. But Linux is the vast majority of them.
Right.
So there's probably a number of Linux servers sitting in enterprises that we've lost track of. And this is a great opportunity to go scan the network and make sure that you patch every one of them.
It sounds like the people who are most at risk of this are the people who are most able to respond to it, like IT professionals.
That's right.
So I guess the key question here is that for the listener, the guy who's sitting at home with his Windows machine or his Mac,
The Macs, not the Windows machine.
Only the Macs, but even so, this is a big thing that you're going to be hearing about. Do they have any reason to worry, really?
There's nothing they shouldn't worry because there's nothing they can do about it anyway.
Okay.
I'm going to post something that I saw.
It could something bad happen, to something they care about, but, a particular site or a particular company. Yeah, of course.
And I saw it.
That's why enterprises need to worry about this.
Rick, I saw a command line test that you can use on your Mac to text for your bash vulnerability. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to post that so people can put that in. And Cal, you just, pull up the terminal. And then you'll see the page with the code that you can put into there.
Yep.
And it runs a scan, and I guess you then find out whether you are vulnerable.
Whether you even have a shell.
And in addition to that, within a couple of weeks from now, Apple's going to have a software update to plug into it automatically anyway.
There you go. There you go. So that's being worked on right now. I want to do one more thing, Rick, before we go. And we have not done this seriously here because we haven't had any hands. I don't think any of us have had our hands on Chromebooks. But you've tested them out. And the one that I posted on our website here was that HP, that was the 14-inch HP.
Right.
It was a great deal that was out. It's no longer there.
Yeah.
One of your great deals. But just talk about Chromebooks in general. And what are your thoughts? You've had your hands on them. Are they the next best thing since sliced bread, or what are they?
Well, I'm going to admit, first of all, that I'm kind of flip-flopping on this a little bit, because I think in our past discussions of Chromebooks, I've been a little hard on them and said that they're really just kind of like netbooks, and they're no real value to choosing one over a Windows laptop, especially when there's only maybe a $50 price differential. But when I was shopping for a machine for my son to take to middle school, I started really seriously thinking about a Chromebook. And short version of the story is I went on eBay and I picked up a used Samsung Series 5 Chromebook with, I think, like a 12-inch screen for all of about $125. And I was really, really impressed with the build quality of the machine and with the Chrome OS in general for being just great for kids, for students, and,
Have you done a review of this? Have you done an article on this?
I have actually not reviewed Chromebooks per se. I mean, not except for the
when
one that
do,
I bought for my son.
When you do, let us know.
Yeah,
because
of course.
I'd like to make that available to our listeners as well, because it's something we're just breaking into right now.
Right.
But it does seem like a great solution. We've spent kids, a lot of schools now are investing in that kind of thing. Rick, we have had so much fun here today, and we're running out of time already. Thanks so much, Rick Broider, for being with us again.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
It's always a pleasure when the Gadget Guy is in the house. Doc, here comes another drone. Hey, we're going to stick around for just a few minutes here, and then there's going to be another hour coming up where Gary and Cal and I are going to be answering your questions that you submitted to the Internet Advisor via our website. Back with that up next.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor. To see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage at www.internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll also find past podcasts, our toolkit full of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, plus other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage and send us an email with the details. Don't forget to look for us on Facebook. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor.
Welcome to hour number two of the Internet Advisor. Hope that you are enjoying this broadcast of ours on our affiliates. Glad to have you folks along with us. We are going to be answering some of the emails that have been sent to us this week. Chris, second part of our program is always about helping you with your computer problems. And while we're preempted on our local broadcast station, WJR in Detroit, because of the football schedule, we take your email questions and answer them. And that's what Gary Baker, Cal Carson, and I will be doing in just a moment. And once again, welcome to the second hour of our show. I'm co-host Foster Brown, along with Gary Baker and Cal Carson in here. And guys, it's so good to have you along to help answer the folks' questions.
I just found out something about Cal.
Uh-oh.
I think we've heard over a number of years here that Cal's an actor.
Yes.
And has been in a number of plays.
Yes, being acting.
But he's going to be in something kind of neat and portray a dead man, eh?
You have the graveyard shift, I hear.
I'm sorry. He just told me this. He had no idea I was going to mention it on the air.
You should have known, Cal.
The Crocker House Museum in Mount Clemens, which is part of the Mount Clemens Historical Society, every year has what they call a funeral tea and a cemetery walk.
Sounds a little grisly, but...
Okay. It does, but...
But it raises lots of money.
Yeah, good. It raises money for the...
For them up there. And Kim Parr actually does the funeral tea. And basically, is they set up the Crocker House as if someone had passed away, and they show you the process when they used to actually have the funerals at home.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And they walk through the whole thing, and they also have a tea and everything like that. And then they also select out one of the cemeteries.
By the way,
in
if
the
it was
area.
Irish, should be lots of whiskey.
I think there's going to be lots of whiskey.
That's
anyway.
My heritage. The tea would be spiked. Go ahead.
Well, you'd be whiskey with just a little bit of tea in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Irish tea.
But they also select out a cemetery where they'll go in and they'll pull out, you know, five or six notable people in Mount Clemens, and they'll have actors that will portray these people in character and in costume in the cemetery. So basically 20 people will walk up and this woman or man will portray this particular
person. So who
are
you portraying?
I'm portraying a gentleman named Henry Lightbourne, and Henry Lightbourne was a gentleman who immigrated from Jamaica to Canada and then settled in Mount Clemens, and he had a bathhouse and a hotel there.
Mount Clemens, by the way, for those who may not be aware of it, has been famous for its baths.
Yeah, mineral baths. Just huge up there.
Yeah, late 1800s.
And so I'll be doing a portrayal of him. There'll be five other
people. Do you have to talk like you're from the islands, man?
No, I'm not going to do that because that was good. I don't do that well at all. Mine usually come out more like a Scottish brogue when I'm all done. But, yeah, it'll be fun. You can get tickets. Check for the Crocker House Museum online. And that's Mount Clemens. And it's lots of fun.
Lots of fun.
That's great.
That is.
That's
by the way, folks, this second...
Resident actor.
Our second part of the program, we're going to be getting to the emails that you folks have sent in and starting to answer some of them. But if you go to internetadvisor.net, you'll see a little bit more about why we take the emails and use them to answer questions. Because we are preempted right now on WJR, which is our flagship station in Detroit. What that means is that there's a football game going on while we're recording this right now. So, you folks who are on our affiliates, it's just same thing as usual is going on. And but I do want to say this and encourage folks from our affiliates, you folks who were out in Kalamazoo and Lansing, Grand Rapids, and out near Muskegon, please get to internetadvisor.net if you have a question. Click on the Contact Us button, and then you'll see it's just a very simple form. You put in your email address, a phone number, and your name, and then describe your problem for us. And we are more than happy all throughout the week, 24/7 as a matter of fact, to answer these questions. And then what we do on the weekends when we do our show is we gather a select few of those and we answer them. Sometimes we talk with some of the people who have selected them and chat with them on the air about it. But it's a great way for us to help not only you with your specific problem, but a whole bunch of other people as well. So again, your questions via email are extremely important during this sporting season, which really goes through the fall, the winter, and into the March, ends with March Madness at the end of the basketball season, collegiate basketball season in the spring. So your questions are very important. We're answering them all week long, and we love to bring them up here on the weekends when we get a chance to talk a little bit about that. Guys, just to kind of quickly, I want to recap something that we've been talking about last hour, and that was this bash virus, or it's called shell shock, is the virus that takes advantage of the bash, which is a...
Well, it's a vulnerability. It's not a virus. It's not.
There's a virus that takes advantage? No, okay.
It's a vulnerability.
Okay.
Now you can inject a virus, and what happens is at the end of a command, because that's what the bash shell does, is it allows you to put in commands to give the command to the server.
Okay, so the shell is kind of a way of giving instructions to your computer on what to do.
Think of it as if you hit run, that the program that opens up that allows you on a Windows machine to do it, the same thing happens on a Linux server.
Okay, and this is primarily on Mac-based...
Linux, primarily,
Linux,
which... because the Mac OS is based on a Linux.
Yep, that's why they're
OS.
In. Okay.
So then you can actually run the Bash shell on that as well.
Okay. Which is even more fun because Linux is based on Unix, and that's part of it as well.
That's right.
Okay, so basically, Guy, the bottom line question is that people are asking is, am I at risk if I have a Mac, for instance? Cal, what would you say to them when they ask that question?
In 99.999% of cases, I'd say no.
Right.
And it's because they're not functioning the machine as a server.
Right.
And because they're not doing that particular function, then their vulnerability, I would say, is extremely low.
And in addition to that, I understand that Apple is coming out with a fix for the server levels. Am I right, you're saying?
They're going
to
have a fix overall. The operating system.
I gotcha. Okay.
For that particular thing with a security update that will be coming out shortly.
So much ado is being made about this, and I guess it could be serious.
It is serious, but what it is because it's so easy to add something at the end of these commands in the Bash shell, that's the problem. It's the ease in which anybody really can take and add something.
But generally speaking,
but they only get user-level access, so there's some other things as well. So it's not as disastrous as, say, Heartbleed and some other things that used OpenSSL.
Okay, back in just a moment to start answering the questions you presented us with here on the Internet Advisor. I should acknowledge the folks, as they say, behind the glass. And that's Rich Luzinski this week, who is handling all the duties back there. Rich, thanks so much. He has recovered from his birthday cake. And he is ready to go for this hour of our program, where we're taking your questions presented to us by email. And again, to simply do that, just go to internetadvisor.net, click on the Contact Us button in the upper right-hand corner, and then use your email and your phone number and your name, and give us a little bit of a background on the problem that you're handling. And Kel, let's start with one of the folks who brought up a problem that we thought best was handled by you because it was about a Mac device.
Well,
an Apple device, rather, I should say.
Very nice. Either way, it works out just fine. this was from Walter Wozniak. This is a gentleman who's a listener, and he writes, love your show. Of course he does. no, I'm just kidding. Love your show and miss you during football season. Have a video of my echocardiogram ultrasound of my heart that I can run on my Windows 7 desktop. It consists of several files as well as an executive program or executable.
Executable program, right.
Is there any way I can run this video on my iPad? So after I read some more detail on it about that particular type of file he wanted to look at and that sort of thing, I did some research, and it comes up that, yes, he can do this on his iPad.
Just to step back a second, you said you looked up the kind of file he was looking for. The issue was a certain video file?
Well, see,
it had to be run?
It's not. He wanted to look at the video, but the video was not created in what we would call the traditional format. It was more in a
proprietary. Right. It wasn't .mov. It wasn't MP4. One of those ones.
Lord, I'm so glad you were here to say that word. Yeah, exactly what it is. So because it was a specialized format that set up for that particular thing, I had to do some research on it because most of your standard decoders or translators weren't covering that particular thing. So it was made by a company called DICOM, which I believe is based somewhere out of Germany, actually. Works in association with Philips Electronics.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took that, did some cross-referencing, and it comes out that there is an iPad application. Actually, it'll run on iPad or the iPhone that he can download from the App Store that will give him that ability to do it. Now, good news and bad news. The application's there. Bad news, got to chuck up $50 to do it.
Whoa!
But, you know, that's what happens when you have something that's specialized like that, because the people who wrote it obviously have to be able to recover something from it. And that's the best way of doing it. And it's called OSiriX.
OSiriX. And how do you spell Siri?
That's capital O, then S-I-R-I, like that girl we know, with an X behind it, space H as in Harry, D as in dog.
I'll be darned. And OSiriXHD.
Correct. It's by a company called Piximo. And
$50.
Yep, $50, and you can find out how that, and he can have that running right on.
I'm wondering. I received when I went to have, I had an MRI done on my back, And I'm wondering, and they gave me a disc when I left. Mm-hmm. Now, the disc, I'm going to guess, is pretty much the same kind of thing, isn't it?
Well,
is it proprietary?
Considering that Philips Electronics is big in MRIs and stuff like that, they're big in dental
yes.
with imaging
yeah.
as
yep.
well.
Yep.
I would probably say it's probably running down that same path.
Yep. It's a proprietary piece of software.
Well, it's,
so there's, yeah. There might be other ways to deal with that, but with the new iOX 8 coming out, are we thinking that maybe there'll be something similar to this? Because, you know, there's an awful lot of the health and wellness apps that are coming out with the new operating system.
Well, we've got two things. iOS 8, which is the mobile devices, and then you would right. have what's called Yosemite, which will be OS X 10.10, right?
Which is for the Mac OS.
But yeah, that hasn't
Mac
left
OS,
yet.
Yeah, so,
yeah,
but that's sure. not what I was talking
oh,
about.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But with that and with the transducers and the other capability of the of the new iPhone, I'm just wondering.
Oh, I see what you're saying, yeah.
Now, you know, this is proprietary. I'm wondering if you can get the same thing or something similar, or would they have a plug-in eventually?
Well, see, I would think not, because the things that are under the health apps that they're offering for iOS 8 seem to be more of measurement and data collection and gathering.
Okay.
Yeah.
As opposed to being something yeah. for doing analyzing or analyzing after the fact or consulting.
Let me
okay.
piggyback on this, by the way, and stray a little bit from our conversation about this application you can play.
We never do that.
On
that.
I have been very impressed. Now, I am, what was I going to say? I have iOS 8 on my iPhone 5 now, okay? And
yes.
I've done the patch, the second one that came out, the one that worked. And I there's a health function, and you just mentioned this, the health, you have a little heart on it, health in the back. I don't have any programs that run on that right now, but there's a little something under there called Medical ID. And the cool thing about that, if you folks haven't done this yet, is you can fill in all of the information about yourself. For instance, if you have any allergies, if you're taking medications, I take a whole fistful of them. So I was able to put all of them in there, my dosages, et cetera, gives your link for emergency purposes, blood type, organ donor, your weight and your height. I mean, some basic kind of things. And that's stored in such a way that if you have an emergency and let's say you fall down on the street and EMS is called and you're not conscious, they can actually open up your phone and on the lock screen, you'll have a way of accessing the medical information. Now, they can't get the rest of your information out of there, but at least they can tell what your blood type is in case you need a transfusion. They can see if there's any allergies that you have, and they know the medications you're taking. So I think it's absolutely fascinating what has been opened up with iOS. It's available right now, although, Gary, you're right. Who knows what the APIs will open up to future?
This well, if true. I use that app, I sure hope I don't lend my phone to anybody.
Well, it's behind whatever security you have. So if you have, for instance, one where you've got a thumbprint, you know, or you have, make sure you secure your phone, lock your screen. I think that's important.
Yeah, I was just thinking that if I lend it to somebody and they have an accident and some medical personnel tries to access that and thinks they're taking the same medication I am.
One more good reason
problems.
Not to lend your phone that
yeah,
way.
I
think
so.
That
okay.
people use, for most of us, I think our phones are such personal devices that we don't do much of that lending.
I think right off the bat, if they found Gary's phone with me, they would not give me the Viagra that he takes. But that's another story.
They wouldn't note yeah, that he's a drone pilot, probably. In
or even worse, if you're borrowing a phone from a female, it's like, why is they taking estrogen for this guy now? You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I do understand. And that's a good valid point, Gary. That makes a lot of sense. But like you said, Foster, a lot of us nowadays, everybody has a phone. I mean, how often do you actually say, right. well, here, use my phone? Well, maybe once in a while if they're doing an application
sure.
or something.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part,
or you want to show them something on a phone.
Of course, with the new fingerprint reader, then they just hold up the phone to my fingerprint and swipe it, and that way they can get access
well,
to it.
I understand, though, that, well, Yeah, that's possible. Yes, that's possible. But I understood that with some of the health apps, it has to be a living phone, a living finger behind that.
Well, this would be
grisly
living,
things
just
where people have taken the fingers off.
Hopefully.
Yeah. That is interesting. That's an interesting question. Isn't that something we come up with these different kind of scenarios now because of all the new potentials?
Yeah, and we're just guessing, by the way, folks.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But this is something that if you have an iOS device and you have iOS 8.0.2 on that you can, with that medical, the emergency medical thing is open to you to put the information in it and then on your lock screen to have it available.
You do know you do have applications under that medical thing that you can use right now.
Which ones? Because I couldn't find any.
If you go to the dashboard, it keeps track of your walking and running distance.
Oh, it does? I thought I had to download an app for that.
No, it's already in there.
Well, I've been limping a lot.
And you have things that tell you about your active amount of calories you've been tracking all day if you want to be able to track those.
Now, mine says dashboard empty. So does that mean I have to load some stuff in there?
Yeah.
Okay, but those are available.
Either that or you live a really dull life.
Yeah, that might be it. So there are some places. What, do you go to the App Store?
No, I'll show you more after the break.
Okay, after the break, we'll come back and talk about some of more of those things that you can do now with your iPhones.
and the Android phones have had this for a while.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Okay. All right, back in just a few more minutes, we're going to be answering some more of your questions here on the Internet Advisor. And your tech team today is Mr. Gary Baker, Mr. Cal Carson, holding up the Apple side. And by the way, congratulations, Cal, for being part of the new team running Mac Group Detroit.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I'm glad to be part of that. And we'll keep that tradition going. It's been going that way for over 25 years now. And we're just going to keep it rolling as long as people love user groups.
I think and a lot of people out there love their Macs, and I have benefited from being at the expert table.
We usually average somewhere between 100 and 125 people at each meeting, and we've, I think on the rolls, we got somewhere in the neighborhood of about 400 members.
Yeah, that's great. MacGroupDetroit.org. Right?
No, just MacGroup.org.
Oh, MacGroup.org. Pardon me. MacGroup.org. MacGroup.org. Look for more information on that. Okay, guys. Back to the questions that have been sent in. And we have one here that comes to us. Brenda. Brenda sent this question to us. And she says, how can I remove all of the ads that continuously pop up on my laptop? I can hardly work without consistently being interrupted with them.
Uh-oh.
Well, the first thing that I'd probably do, I think she was a Windows user as well.
Mm-hmm.
Probably what I would do is I would, if you can get around the ads that are popping up, I'd go to malwarebytes.org, or you can link to it off of our website.
And our toolkit.
Right through our toolkit at internetadvisor.net, and download Malwarebytes, install it on the machine, and I would run that program to go through, and that would generally clear up a large portion of any of those pop-ups and stuff like that off the machine. By running that program, that would take care of it. Combo Fix would be a good one to run as well with it, which they can download from either majorgeeks.com or bleepingcomputer.com. And both of those programs should probably take care of just about everything that's out there that's going to give them problems.
Cal, should she also change her pop-up blocker settings to not allow pop-ups? And it'll warn you if you get a pop-up and you can decide if you want to, because sometimes pop-ups are good, because I'm on the Detroit Tigers site right now, a pop-up might be used to give a particular score or whatnot, but otherwise in settings or options, depending on your browser, there's a pop-up blocker. Would that be something good for her to do?
It would definitely not hurt at all to do that. So yeah, I would go along with you on that. Matter of fact, on my own machine, I have my pop-up blocker turned on all the time.
Yeah, me too.
Time I turn it off is whenever, I'm going to a site and I know that I have to deal with the pop-ups on it and I'm willing to.
Now, if I download a white paper or something that I'm interested in, I'll hit download. Well, it won't come up. Well, it's because my pop-up blocker's on. So I have to go in and say, okay, turn it on and allow one time.
I have a piece
and then it'll pop up and I can.
I have an extension to suggest on that one. And it's an extension that works, I believe, on on the Google Chrome. But before I get there, so generally speaking, guys, if somebody is experiencing this problem of pop-up suddenly coming up and interrupting your behavior on your computer, that's a, just the fact that they pop up as a good indication of a virus to start with. Would you say?
Or some sort of malware.
Or toolbar exploit?
Not necessarily, okay, because there are some people, there are some legitimate businesses that, you know, for lack of their understanding of what I call internet etiquette.
Okay.
They will program their websites and they'll have a certain number of pop-ups in it because they think it's really cool and it's a way to get attention.
And there'll be an ad that they sell.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. They want you to get. But it sounds like hers are popping up all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Exactly. So, I have. Go ahead.
So in a particular case, if she's running Internet Explorer, she would click on Start and then go to All Programs, then go to Internet Explorer. Then on the Tools menu, select Pop-Up Blocker, and then either turn it on or off, depending on what the click box is at that particular time.
I would suggest, and this has worked for me for a number of years right now, I installed something called Do Not Track Me by a company called Abine, A-B-I-N-E. And for nothing, it does a wonderful job of blocking the your pop-ups. And in addition to which, you can also, a screen will pop up right away that says, don't track my browsing here, don't track my email here, don't track my credit card here, don't track my phone here. You can, in other words, you can really fine-tune this so that, Gary, for instance, mm-hmm. a pop-up comes on the site and it's something you want. I want this to pop up because this pop-up, for instance, has a form in it
right.
that I want to fill. And it allows you then to get around that. And there are paid-for versions of this, but the free one I have found to be extremely valuable to me. And I have it installed on Chrome. It works marvelously, folks. It's, again, called the name of the software is called Do Not Track Me, but you get it by going to abine.com. That's abine.com. And I will post that in our show notes that you have that again. Do you guys know of any other blockers like that that you've seen or have used?
I just use the one that's embedded in the browsers themselves.
Okay, and they so what's on board the browsers?
Yeah, same way with me. You know, like within Safari, I'll just go in and turn it on and off. Within Chrome, same thing.
Yeah, you can do it within Chrome.
Yeah.
I've just found this to be really handy for me, with Chrome at least, and very effective.
Well, the Do Not Track Me one that you're using is not only just blocking pop-ups,
yes.
but it's also going through and making sure their cookies not planted so they can track your information.
Exactly, exactly. Now, there are some sites where you want cookies tracked. Am I right? You want, for instance, to be able to have a site that when you go back to it, if it's one you use on a regular basis, cookies, to know who you are.
Cookies are not bad. Sometimes they're very good. In fact, they allow you to speed up your browsing experience.
So that's important for people to understand that you know, part of the browsing experience is that with the cookies is that it knows who you are and where you are, and can therefore be able to, you know, say hello to you and bring up all your settings and
that's
things
right.
like that you have, and that's an important thing that you want to have happening when you come back to sites that are very familiar to you. So again, so if you have that pop-ups coming up on a regular basis, check it out. It may be something you can handle in your browser, or if you want to take something a little bit more potent than that, this Do Not Track Me device works really well. Now, does not work on Internet Explorer, I understand. It's not something that works there, but it does work on Chrome for sure. And I'm not sure if it works on Safari or not. Cal, I haven't tried using it there, but apparently on Safari, the tracking software that you have there or the ability to control it is...
Who's on Safari?
Cal.
I am. Religiously.
Yeah, that's what I think. Uh-huh. Okay, another question came up, and this is one from Larry. And he says, although I have downloaded Flash Player many times, I'm constantly told that I need to download it. What am I doing wrong? I use Internet Explorer.
I'm betting, and this is really good too, because I've seen this happen before. It says, you need to download Flash Player. And so you click here. And so you click there, and it downloads Flash Player. And you say, okay, good. I've downloaded Flash Player. And then it comes back and says, you need to download Flash Player. And you click again, I've downloaded Flash Player. And all you're doing is
downloading Flash Player.
After you download it, you have to install it.
Oh, right.
And so I would bet that if he goes to his downloads folder or wherever he defaults his downloads to, he'll find a Flash Player MSI in there if it's on a Windows machine. If he double-clicks that and runs through the actual installer, then the next time Flash is needed on his machine, it won't say download Flash Player.
Isn't it true, though, one of the things at least I found is that Adobe is constantly updating Flash. You see, in other words, you're going to see a lot of this, whereas you won't necessarily with other pieces of software.
Flash can sometimes be very porous, and there's a lot of security.
Oh, I love that line. I'm going to remember that. I have never used that before. That is beautiful.
It's a leaky rowboat.
And there are still some sites that use it quite a bit. They do have to, every time they find a vulnerability, they have to patch it.
Yeah, and eventually Flash will eventually go away. People will either A, get tired of the vulnerabilities, or B, more and more adaptation of HTML5.
That's what I was going to say.
Other protocols will take care of that over time.
So now, the
reason that it started, because the other programs couldn't do what Flash could.
And Flash allowed you to see animation, you to see visuals, like videos, et cetera.
With very, very little bandwidth needed and very little storage needed. Right. So it's a really great compression ratio to be able to get that kind of animation or movement.
You use the word HTML5. I'm hearing a lot of it as well. Am I right that was Microsoft's attempt to create a new protocol for seeing? It wasn't Microsoft. Okay.
No. So what it is HTML is the
hypertext markup
language.
Right.
Yep. And basically, it's that it's what's needed to allow you to see what's on your screen in a browser. So it's the browser protocol. So it basically HTML5 allows you to move things around. It's used primarily for the ability to create one website, and it resizes automatically for different screen sizes.
So that's the ability for you to see a same or a full presentation of a page on a much smaller device, a phone.
Right, without having to, come up with two different programs of the same page, right? Mm-hmm. Two different markup languages. It's a markup language is really what it is. I'm trying to explain it without saying that, but that's what it is.
Exactly. So, but this is a protocol.
It's a display language, right?
So we're trying to get this, I mean, the attempt now is to push to have this become the way of presenting video.
It's like bringing on a new standard for the web.
That's exactly it.
I don't know if anybody's, anyway, yeah.
But I've heard expressed that way, that they're trying to move that direction.
Yeah, until their 6 comes out. Right. I mean, but that's it.
Yeah, exactly. All right, folks, another quick break. And when we come back, we've got some more answers for questions that you've posed to us here at the Internet Advisor. Gary Baker, Cal Carson, and Foster Brown answering your questions here on the Internet Advisor. I would like to thank all of you folks out there who have sent us emails during the week. And on a regular basis have questions that you pose to us, which we're more than happy to answer. Many times, the questions that we pose here on the weekends are ones that we've taken some time during the week to also answer. But sometimes are ones we haven't had a chance to do that with, and we've got a couple of them coming up in just a moment. But you can get your questions to us for our weekend program here, and throughout the week we'll also answer them, by simply going to internetadvisor.net. And when you're there, click on the Contact Us button in the upper right-hand corner. Put your email address, your phone number, your name in there, and then tell us a little bit about your question, the background to it.
Tell us everything you can.
Yeah, that's true. Because we're going to be swapping emails with you until we get enough information.
Actually, the more information you can provide, like the operating system.
Yeah, that's true.
The type of computer you're using, what time of day your problem is, that sort of thing. All those sort of things really do help to make it that much easier for us to be able to give you an answer that's quick and concise.
I just had an experience I want to share with you guys. I thought was fascinating, and I want to let people know about it if they didn't know about it already. I use Dropbox for a lot of the storage. I have a lot of storage online, but iCloud, OneDrive, and Dropbox is something. I have a terabyte of storage up there because I pay for the business version, which is like $10 a month. Anyway, the issue is, my daughter was changing computers. She was going from MacBook Air, one version, and she was going to a new one. And And so, and she was giving that old one to her sister. So I was taking the old drive, and I had uploaded all of her pictures, et cetera, in order to keep them up there safe, because we were giving the hard drive to the new old computer to her sister. And she was going to lose that stuff. So we wanted to keep them safe there. Well, I gave them to her in about a month, 2 months ago, and I thought that she had gotten them all off onto her machine. Turns out, I got a panic call yesterday from her husband, Kurt, and he says, all she got was the markers, the play settings. She did not get the actual files themselves, and she has 10 years of photographs, and she's a wonderful photographer. Well, fortunately, I had them on Dropbox, but because she told me she had already put them onto her machine, I had erased those files on Dropbox.
Do you pay for your Dropbox?
Yes.
Okay, keep going. This is going to get better.
Now, what happened is I went up there, and I thought, oh, dear God, I wonder if they're still there. Even if you're not a paid user, you get 30 days to be able to bring those back to life. So thank God I was able to, and it's a very simple. You go up to the trash can, right-click on it, and it shows you everything that's in the trash can, and then you can individually, or a batch of files, say, restore, and they'll bring them back. And I was able to bring back all of her photos, and when I brought them back, then I was able to then get a share link, and boom, now she's able to get them. If you buy, now this is a little bit more money, if you buy the I think it's an extended warranty kind of thing, and I'm not sure of the cost in that. They will hold those for a full year. So you have that ability. But I just want to let folks who know, who use Dropbox, know that you have that backup ability, that even if you have erased those files, you have 30 days to get them back again.
I'm going to double check it just to make sure, but I'm almost positive. You use CrashPlan, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Had you put those on CrashPlan, from what I've been told, and I'll check
they it should
just
be
to make
there.
Sure, they'll be there. If you throw them away, they're still there forever.
Wow. Now, that's here's a question for you, folks. CrashPlan is one of the remote storage programs. You have Carbonite. You have a bunch of other ones.
Online storage.
So if I put all of her pictures up there, for instance,
yes,
even though they're not part of my current backup on my MacBook, would a version of them still be up there in the cloud?
It is my understanding that is correct.
Wow. That is really valuable to know.
Because I'm going to double check that to make sure, but I'm almost a positive, because I know someone who literally had thrown a bunch of files out 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Wow. And they went back and they were able to pull them back.
Holy mackerel, that is really important. But at least right now, if you have a Dropbox, within 30 days, regardless of the account that you have, you can get those things back.
Yeah, that's
back. Pretty
amazing. That's great.
And that was 10 years of photos that she's taken that are extremely important to her.
And they're backed up somewhere else, though.
Now they are. Because I was the backup system at that point, and she had not, there was no place on the hard drive.
So she does have an external hard drive somewhere where she has copied all those particular photos off.
Now she does.
And then taken that hard drive and placed it somewhere other than where that computer is.
Yeah, now she has to do that. She has to invest in that. She did not have that before, but she's going to have to invest in that.
60 bucks, and she's in.
Terabyte, was it 500 gigabytes at least? Is it for 60?
You can get half a terabyte for 50 bucks.
Yeah, it's amazing what you can get. So, as Gary used to say, belts and suspenders.
Yep.
If you got cloud storage, make sure you got the
If you have cloud storage, just don't erase them.
That's true. Just don't erase them, period.
And they back them up.
Okay, let's go back. We have another question here from John, I believe is Buckler. And he says, Cal, I have need to access Excel files stored in a desktop computer from my laptop or desktop computers in another state. I want to actually see the other computer screens from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., 5 days a week. I also want to be able to access workbook and view other tabs in the workbook. That's an Excel spreadsheet. Can you recommend a product that can accomplish this?
Well, initially, right off the bat, the first thing that popped in my head was LogMeIn, which is an application over the web that I've used in the past and still use.
For technical support, really, is what it started with.
Right? Yeah, for technical support and also just for, you know, being able to help people out remotely. You know, hey, I'm trying to do this in Microsoft Word. How do I do it? Mm-hmm. Here, let me connect to your machine through my browser. I can actually see your screen on my screen. What I do on my keyboard is actually taking place on your computer at the other end.
Yeah.
And LogMeIn has been one I've used for years because they had a free client, and you can just go crazy if it was just, you know, you yourself using it and not in a business sense. Well, since then, they've gone up to a point where you actually have to buy it. Mm-hmm. But I forgot, and Rick Broida, our cheapskate guy, reminded me that there was another one out there that I had completely forgotten about, and that was called TeamViewer. And TeamViewer is free for private use. So he can download TeamViewer from TeamViewer.com.
Wow.
Load it on his computer. And then there's a certain amount of information that he has to have from that computer so that he can put it into that sort of thing. And then anywhere he can get internet access in the world, he can control that computer remotely and be able to do all the things he wants to be able to do.
Now, can he use remote desktop connection that's part of the operating system?
That's a good question. Yeah.
The problem with remote desktop that I have found out is that when you you go into a sub-session basically within the computer, so you're not actually running the desktop of the computer directly, you're doing it within a sub-session. If that session dies, the computer is still in whatever state it was at that time. Where when you use something like LogMeIn or TeamViewer, you're actually sitting, it's almost like you're sitting
real access
there on the computer
that's in
front of it.
So the way I read his email was that he just wanted access. I'm not sure that somebody else isn't using that computer as well.
Well, I think they are. And then he was saying that this is a company computer that he wants to be able to remotely log into.
But at any rate, if there is someone on the other end using it, he can connect to it. And then most remote access programs will say, hey, do you want to let this person come in?
Oh,
they
see.
Say
somebody
yes,
knows, yeah.
And then they actually be able to go in.
Now, there's some,
but you could set it up so that it's always capable to do that,
Well, what he would do is that he'd have an ID on that computer, and he would log into that computer with those credentials, and then he wouldn't have to have authorization to go in because he is authorized by the nature of the system.
Another one that's a real been around for a while is gotomypc.com as well. There's another way of doing that, apparently.
Yeah, he could do that with that as well.
Okay, but you're suggesting LogMeIn and TeamViewer is free.
Yes, no, TeamViewer is free.
LogMeIn isn't, though.
Not anymore.
All
right. But I've used those both, and I know they're good.
Guys, thank you so much for helping out a lot of people here this weekend on the Internet Advisor. And once again, folks, if you would like to get your questions answered, it is a relatively easy thing to do. You simply go to internetadvisor.net. On the upper right-hand corner, you've got a Contact Us button. Hit that. And then you will be able to enter your question in there along with a way of getting back in touch with you. And we will do that. And next week, we'll be back to answer more of your questions here on the Internet Advisor.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show, Detroit's longest-running, locally produced computer show with Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and their team of experts. For more information about our weekly show, to ask a question of our experts, or to find the show notes for this podcast, visit www.internetadvisor.net and look for us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.